Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz and a holdover from yesterday. It is the coach, Mike Brown, browncapital.org. So, Mike, you know, we kind of finished yesterday talking about pension funds, and, of course, there is none bigger than CalPERS, California Teachers Pension, and, of course, it's a disaster, and they keep making false claims, yet they don't have enough money, and they're paying out right now, for every dollar they take in, they're paying out four. How the hell are they going to survive?
Well, they're going to have to make some drastic changes to either the benefit they're currently paying. They're going to have to move back the age of retirement, which we've done in Illinois. You know, if you started teaching after January 1st, 2011 in Illinois, not that you ever want to bang the drum for Illinois in too many things, but you can't draw that pension as a teacher until you're 67. So they're going to have to move the age back, and they're going to have to collect more from their constituency. So, I mean, that's they are where they are. I mean, there's no, you can debate it, whose fault it is until you're blue in the face, but they are where they are, and they're going to have to make some changes. And, you know, as we've talked before with some of these pensions, you know, current people are either going to have to take a haircut, or at some point in time, you're going to get decapitated. It's going to be, the whole thing's going to implode. So take a haircut now, take a little less, and hopefully, you know, enough so that it's viable for the next, you know, generations coming behind you.
I mean, is there any chance? I mean, are they not too far deep in already, though? I mean, is there, can they recover? I mean, you know, the big trucker's pension, I forget what they are, which one it was, but they're paying out $370 for every dollar. I mean, you cannot keep paying out that kind of money and expect to ever get it back, especially because, you know, now, as we talked about yesterday, we've got to redo some of the way that some of these unions are done anyways. And, you know, obviously the jobs that are going to be created are not going to be paying, you know, $50 an hour plus $50 an hour in benefits and plus. It just can't, the numbers just don't work out that way. So there's going to have to be some haircuts there too. So how do they do that? How do they get it done? And will the guys that are in it accept it?
Yeah, that's a tough one, right? Are the votes there? I mean, obviously, the guys that are 40 and under are going to vote for it. You know, if the guys who are 50 and over and already collecting those pensions, are they going to, you know, are they going to agree to it? You know, to avoid lengthy litigation, you're going to have to get everybody to agree to it, or at least a majority. Yeah, I mean, I think if they're going to have to go to them and say, here are the numbers. You know, this is what it is, and there are going to be some painful cuts in there. But there's no way around it. You know, a lot of those pensions, when they were giving them out in the 70s and 80s and different things, different times, they were not taking a look at, like, okay, I may have people collecting this into their 90s. I may have 25% of these people may live into their late 80s, early 90s and collecting this. I don't know exactly what the percentages are, but it's certainly a far higher number than they actuarially gained for. So, you know, changes have to be made. I mean, the world has changed. People are living longer. So, yeah, and I think to a certain degree people understand that. It's certainly not going to be easy to sell to the guy who's, you know, wants to retire in a year or 2 years, or the person that's already been retired for a couple of years. But, you know, that's where we're at. And maybe it's here. Maybe it's a laddered approach where we're not going to change people who are 60 and over, but everybody under that, we're gonna have to move your age back in order to make this work. It may have to be a laddered approach, and, you know, as we discussed yesterday, the younger group are going to be the ones that have to bear the brunt of it. You know, people like me in their 40s.
Yeah, well, I got news for you, because me in 18 months, I'm lining up at the office. I'm taking it at 62, my pension. Screw down.
Why not?
I ain't never going to get it. So, My point is, though, isn't a lot of it have to do with some of the pilfering of some of the money and some of the way the money's been lent out or given out? And, I mean, you know, obviously, if done properly and paid in properly, there should not really be this much of a shortfall, should there?
No. I mean, it had been invested properly, had it not been pilfered, had it been actuarially underwritten, you know, that, you know, obviously things have changed, so it's, you know, that's, it's harder to point the finger at that. But yeah, some of those things been done, but we are where we are. So again, pointing fingers doesn't fix anything. So,
well, but,
the, you know, low interest rates for the last, you know, 10, 12 years certainly haven't helped.
Well, yeah, but they can invest money in the market as well. That's what they do. I mean, you know, the insurance company. I mean, wouldn't it be wiser to have, for example, when you sign up for your pension, you go to work for whoever in a pension, and we're going to reevaluate this every 3 to 5 years, whatever, you know, put a number on it, and you do an evaluation so we find out where we are instead of waiting. Because I mean, this is not something that should have been, we shouldn't be just finding this out now. We've known. For Social Security has been in trouble for 15 years. Why are we still discussing it? Why haven't they done something about it? That's my question.
No political will. You know, again, people that are more concerned about being reelected than actually getting some things done. You know, and let's go back to the pensions. Why not do an individual? You, when you sign up at your company, as long as you work here, you know, you're going to put X in, we're going to match X, and everybody has their own portable pension plan. You know, and you can take it with you. If you leave Chrysler and you go to Ford, you take it with you. And then everybody, you know, you can invest it how you want. And that, you know, that cuts out a lot of the pilfering. You know, there's not a pool of money there that's tempting for them to go out and, you know, loan out to their cronies, et cetera. You know, Bill Vegas with it, whatever the case may be in history. You know, why not do that? Everybody, you know, the technology is out there, you know, especially for the generations coming behind us. They do everything online anyway. So that solves a lot of the problems, and it doesn't make it a collective issue. So if you don't want to put money in there, okay, well, then too bad. That was your choice for the last 50 years, you know, when you get to retirement.
I agree, and I just wonder, you know, again, where we don't really have control and nobody really knows where the money's going. You know, and this is not a new issue. I mean, you know, in a lot of businesses, that's for, you know, embezzling. And I'm not saying anybody's embezzling the pensions, but I'm just saying when you don't really track the money and you don't do what you're supposed to do, for example, the Illinois teachers' pension, excuse me, they haven't contributed since 1999. They're never supposed to contribute every year.
It's been that long, is it? They have not contributed to the pension or to the Social Security?
So to teachers' pensions, which they're supposed to contribute every year, but there's a baseline. If the money grows X amount, that they don't they don't have to contribute. And I think these are another issue where, you know, you should have to live like we do under a budget, and you should have to make the payments you're supposed to make. I mean, you know, if you or I ran either our houses like the state of Illinois or the government itself, we'd be either in bankruptcy court or jail. We wouldn't be able to get away with this because we don't have the Federal Reserve sitting back there printing money when we need it. And I think that's another issue that we'll get when we get back from the break, because, you know, one of the things that, you know, everybody wants to talk about is the Fed is inflation, inflation, inflation. Well, inflation, we don't need inflation. Okay. We need the government to quit spending so much damn money and quit giving it away, and then we wouldn't have a need for inflation. But we'll get to that topic when we get back from the break. This is Mike Brown, browncapital.org. Also, the ex with the L.A. Dodgers, just in case anybody forgot, he's an ex-Dodger as well. But he is at browncapital.org. Make sure you check him out. And this is The Bubba Show. LibertyTalk.fm will get you a download of the show every single day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends with the new host, Xander. And you want to see Bubba's Bottom Line, my brand new podcast, which is done weekly. All you have to do is go to BubbaTrading.com, and you can see me spout off and bitch for about 30 minutes. But a lot of fun as I like to enjoy myself. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back after the break with more from the coach, Mike Brown. Todd Bubba Horowitz, The Bubba Show. We're coming right back. Welcome Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the coach, Mike Brown, browncapital.org. And, of course, check him out. Great, does a great job in the money fields and has some great opinions. So, Mike, I look at it and I go, they go inflation, inflation, inflation. And I go, bullshit. We don't need inflation. All the inflation does is allows them to pay back the dollars that they borrowed in the future, because what they're really trying to do is to get me to pay more for my goods and services so they can get more tax money off the top. So what do I need inflation for? I think it's BS. You tell me why I'm wrong or why I'm right.
No, I agree. I mean, we don't, you know, you need a little bit of inflation in order for the system to work. Obviously, if you're, you know, if I'm buying my house today, I'm hoping to sell it for a little bit of a profit down the road. But, you know, we don't need, if some of the hyperinflation that they're talking about is simply to inflate away, you know, today's dollars that they're borrowing with, because they'll be worth less down the road, and that's how you get around the deficit. You know, at some point in time, we just live within our means. We wouldn't have to do that. So, and hopefully, you know, we'll start to, you know, of course, I'm 40, going to be 47, and we've never done it in my lifetime, so I don't know that we'll see that.
We're never going to do it. I mean, as long as there's a Federal Reserve and a fiat currency system, we're never going to do it, because they have the ability to create new money out of thin air, which is why we're always paying more. I mean, now, you're a little younger than me, about 20 years, but I made the equivalent dollars. I think I made more money in the 70s than I make now. Because I
got to keep more, right?
Well, I got to buy more. Listen, I was paying for my cell phone. I was paying like $300 a month just for one phone, right? It was like a dollar a minute.
Yeah, right?
I mean, you know, the phone itself, you had to pay $2,000 to get the phone, if you remember. Well, maybe you didn't have one back then, but I did. Okay. So my point is that all this inflation talk is only so they can inflate my taxes and make me pay more. So as the author of The Creature of Jekyll Island says, it's the hidden tax of inflation, that because if you inflate the cost of the price of your house and your property taxes go up, you're not paying more money to the government, are you not?
Absolutely.
So I'm not a big fan.
I think the property tax is one of those places that over the last 30 years, they have, you know, silently just stripped away a lot of money from the American public. You know, when I was growing up, you know, what was the percentage? I mean, now you're looking at, you know, within the, you know, over the course of a 25-year mortgage, you're going to pay the amount of your house in real estate tax. It's absolutely ridiculous. You know, that's what I'm saying. And I don't think the schools are any better than the ones when we grew up. You know, they love to build these Taj Mahals. You know, classes and things that my kids go to some extent are, to me, ridiculous. They didn't need all the bells and whistles they have. But, you know, those property taxes just keep going up. You know, why does that need to go up every year?
I don't know.
That's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, it has to go up.
There will be a revolt. People will revolt. You know, when your property tax, you look at some of the places around here, imagine what yours are up there around Chicago. I'm talking about down here. But, you know, when I'm paying, you know, 6-7% of my value of my home every year for what, the privilege of driving down a road that's falling apart?
Come on. Well, there you have it. But that's why we need to rebuild America. But so, I mean, I agree. I mean, look at, you know, I had this epiphany actually yesterday, and I go, why do I even own a house? I you know what? I got news for you. As soon as I can't own it anymore, and I don't want to say the reason why, but I mean, eventually, when I get to get rid of it, I'm never buying another house. I'd rather buy a condo. You know, I don't have to worry about all the other crap. I mean, you know, not only do I have the house to worry about and the property taxes, I got the internal workings. I mean, you know, as you know, a house is like a bottomless pit of cash anyways. And you're not really buying the house as an investment, although it's nice when it appreciates for you, but you're really buying the house. It's like renting a place to live, and it gives you some tax benefit. And it is like a, even if your house didn't go up, it is like a forced savings at no interest, but you're putting money away because you are putting money into your house in that stage, right?
Yes. And those figures work as long as the real estate taxes are reasonable. You start factoring in the real estate taxes, if you get no appreciation into your home, and that's okay, I've been in the house I have now for 20 years, and my real estate taxes have gone from $2,200 to $4,700 in that period of time. So, you know, let's just take an average of $3,000, let's say, which would be on the low side. But So in the course of those 20 years, I paid another $60,000 in real estate taxes that had I rented, I would not have paid.
It takes me 3 years to pay 60.
Well, yeah. When you got your mansion up there in Deerfield, that's price of living.
Yeah, right.
Living in the gilded area.
I got a mansion. I had cocktails with a buddy of mine at Morton's the other night, and his real estate taxes are 42.
Oh my God! Yeah, that's.
Imagine.
And again, you know, he could probably rent that house. You know, so yeah, when you start factoring that in, you know, that's if you really start to put a pencil to it, should you own property.
Well, I think you need to own a hard asset for that reason, because you don't know what's going to happen in, this, in the overall system. So you need to own something, you know, and
well,
I do.
In the old days, once you got to, you know, you got it paid off, you know, and you're paying $700-$900 a year in property tax, okay. Now I've got some, I've always got somewhere to live in my old age. And what happens now, like you said, if you're not bringing in that kind of income, you know, to pay that on top in, you know, in your old age, then they can take the house from you, you know, just by not paying your property tax.
Right.
So you own it outright. So to me, it's, you know, I think that the property taxes, they've got to come up with another way. But again, you know, unless we overhaul the whole system, it's not like they're going to, you know, once they, how often do your taxes actually go down?
Never, unless you fight them. But I like my property taxes in Fort Wayne, Indiana, in the house I own there. Now there's a good property tax bill, $226 a year, that I can live with. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's another reason people are fleeing Illinois, right? If they, you know, it's not just the state income tax, which, by the way, they're talking about hiking up, which is a travesty. But you know, our real estate taxes here are some of the highest in the country, right? So.
Well, they want to compete with California and New York because we're the three biggest Democratic areas in the world. They want to get more. I mean, I don't know how anybody would ever want to live in, other than the beautiful weather, but the cost of living in California, you got to have another job just to pay your outside taxes. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's obscene, right? Yeah. At some point in time, people have to wake up to that. Maybe there's enough, you know, industries there that, you know, that the money is obscene, that they don't, you know, it doesn't really hit them. To the point that it would change the way they vote. But, yeah, I mean, it's certainly happened in Illinois because you are seeing an outflow of people. So, and that's, yeah, when are they going to come to their senses and stop that? You know, I mean, at some point in time, downstate Illinois, and the population has to increase, but, you know, is going to push back against Chicago and the things they're giving away up there that we're having to pay for.
Listen, I'm with you 1,000%. Again, you know what a bitch I am anyways, normally. So, but these things I find to be extra irritating, because this goes back to what we started off this segment with, which was inflation. So now, you know, my house stopped going up, but my real estate taxes have not stopped going up. All right. My house is actually, believe it or not, I bought my house in the bottom of 09. Okay. Yet I think my house is worth less today than I paid for it. And I put in, I put in double into add on the addition. So how do you think I feel about that?
And you know, part of that has to be the fact that there's fewer buyers out there for it, which keeps the price down. For the simple fact that you have to factor in the real estate tax, right? If I'm gonna come in and buy that house from you and raise my kids there for the next 20 years, I got to take into account, you know, the high real estate tax, which, you know, tamps down the appreciation again, which was the whole reason for buying a home in the first place.
Trust me, we'll talk about that in the Federal Reserve when we come back from the break. Then we do have to talk a little markets, but obviously I know you can't make any specific recommendations because of what you do for a living, but we can talk general things about what's going on, because I think there's some interesting things happening. But we are with Mike Brown, the coach, browncapital.org. And of course, make sure you check him out. He does a great job and really understands how the market functions and how it works. I think that's important. In the meantime, go to libertytalk.fm and download the Bubba Show every single day. And at bubbatrading.com, you can download Bubba's Bottom Line, my weekly podcast. We're going to step out here for a break. and come back with Mr. Mike Brown after the break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back with more from Mike Brown after the break. The Bubba Show. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report. Bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Mike Brown, browncapital.org. Check him out. What's that phone number again, young man?
309-674-1040.
All right. So, Mike, the Federal Reserve. Now, again, they've done a lot of things I think that they shouldn't have done. I don't believe that they are following the original mandate. And I don't, as I read more into it, I don't think there should have been a Federal Reserve. But, okay, there is one, lender of last resort. And I go, okay, fine. But now they do. Obviously, they're more than lender of last resort. They are a bubble creator and a debt creator, okay. And they're basically the right arm of the United States government that prints some money basically whenever they need it, kind of, right?
Yes.
So now, if we go back to 08, now I said in 08, I think they should let whoever is not strong enough let the banks go bust. What do I care? Okay. Now, and my point to that was, If you want to be the true lender of last resort, you should not be bailing out and giving the banks money so they can pay themselves bigger bonuses and keep making bad loans. You bail out the depositors and make them whole and let the business banks and the business guys go out of business. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's how it was supposed to work. Unfortunately, that's not what they did. They just made the banks bigger. But, yeah, as long as the depositors get their money back, then they took the banks and survived. And there were certainly banks that were in good shape that should have been able, the stronger would have come in, the guys with the good balance sheets. And, law of the jungle, right? The survival of the fittest. So, unfortunately, that wasn't the case. And the people who've really been punished by that are the savers, because interest rates, been driven down to zero. And for the last, 8-9 years, you've earned nothing on your savings, which is part of the reason the market's up. Those people have been driven into the market.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about, I don't want to bash the Fed because I hate them, so I'm not gonna bash them on how they steal my money. And really, every time they do an interest rate, anytime they print more money, they're really just reaching into my pocket and taking some of my money, as well as yours and as well as everybody else that's here, because they're really just offering a secondary on the American dollar. I don't want to talk about that stuff. But, okay, so stock markets. Dow, 20,000, okay? What do you think?
How about it, huh? Did you think who was it that made that call like 15 years ago? Was it Harry Dent that made that call maybe?
Well, Harry Dent's always a bear, so I don't think he made it. But I'll tell you who did make it, who made it a while ago when he shouldn't have. Not that he shouldn't have, but the guy I think you're thinking about, but it wasn't 15 years ago, but was Jeremy Siegel from Wharton. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
His point was, as long as you're going to keep cheap money cheap, then there's only one place to go, and the markets are going to go up. And he did call 20,000. I laughed at him, and I said, he's full of crap. And, of course, look who's full of crap now. But, I don't see it. And in my personal opinion, Mike, I'm not selling the market here. I'm not telling you that you should short the market here. But in my opinion, I am seeing very similar action to 04, 05, 06, 99, 2000, 2001. Which the markets have come really to a screeching halt as far as volatility and trading. And really, the markets, in my opinion, are searching for a reason to break down for a little bit. Again, that is not a bad thing. Markets need a good, healthy kick in the ass once in a while to actually create more strength. So it's not like I'm telling you that I'm not Harry Dent saying the world's going to come to an end. I'm saying that for the health and the wealth of the market, a good correction would never hurt it. It would actually make it better and stronger. And it's actually better and stronger for everybody because it makes everybody more on their toes, which makes competition and a better product for Americans. But so if we get the correction, which I think we will, but again, to me, the market feels like it's kind of languishing around, and it will drift higher because there's always money flowing in from 401ks, IRAs, and things like that, no matter what. So the markets do, when they're dull, do drift higher, but it feels like it's searching for a reason to go down, and it's not going to be an economic reason because we've had plenty of bad economic data over 8 years we didn't go down. It's going to be something like, unfortunately, I always hate to bring this one up, but it was the terrorist attack of 2001 that actually brought the markets down that were dying for a reason to go down, and that was their reason there. And I think the markets are looking for something that we have no idea what it is right now. It will not be economic data. It will be some kind of geopolitical event that will create enough fear that will push the markets lower. What do you say?
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, we've certainly had plenty of poor economic data over the last 3 or 4 years that has not led to, you know, anything bad. I think we had maybe a 10% correction last, what, February and March. It was the first time it tripped through 10% in 3+ years. It didn't stay there very long, right?
I mean, we turned it was January, February. February 11th was the dead low of the markets last year. So that was, but you're right.
Yeah, what I'm seeing is, and I agree with you, it's going to be an outlier. It's going to be some type of black swan event that triggers it and may very well trigger our next recession. And again, you know, these are normal things in the market. They're not, you shouldn't, you know, start stuffing money in your mattress. But I think there, you know, it's not a bad idea to take some profits here, especially, you know, where we've run since the election. One of the things, you know, you mentioned the volatility, which has just absolutely disappeared. I mean, I think the spread between the S&P 500 and the VIX right now is as high as it's been ever. And you go back, you know, the spread in 06, 05, 04, 05, 06 was something like 200%, 211%. You know, and now we're sitting, you know, with the spread somewhere at 458%. So, I mean, it's, which means when we do get volatility, it's going to be, you know, I think it's going to be vicious, you know, when it comes back, you know, which again is not the worst thing in the world. So
no.
I think you need to be prepared for that. You know, cause you know, we always, you find out what your risk tolerance is when things are going down, right?
That's what
we really find out.
A little fear is good for everybody. Well, I think one of the things we've seen is over the last 60 days, we have had the slowest, quietest period in the history of the market, which is we've had the tightest trading range under 2% for the last 60 days. Okay, we've never had a period like this before where we've had a trading range of that narrow. And again, I think that it's an event that's going to occur. Now, one of the things that I do think, and one of the problems I think that we're over anticipating here, which I think will eventually create the correction, is that everybody and their mother is talking about how great everything's going to be. And again, listen, I'm a believer. I'm a fan. I'm a fan of Trump. I think he's going to do a great job if he's given the right opportunity and if he gets help from his people. But there's no way we're getting 4% growth this year. I don't care if he stands on his head and he makes his hair go straight up. It ain't there. There's no way we're getting 4% growth this year. What do you say to that?
No. I mean, it's too big an economy to move that quickly. So yeah, they're not. But again, I don't think negative data there will be the thing that necessarily propels it down. But I think, you know, again, it's going to be some type of outlier. And then that brings the fact that, you know, we are having slower growth, you know, crystallizes that in people's minds. And again, we had a similar thing under Reagan. If we do get that type of correction and a recession, keep buying into it, because I do think that the policies they're bringing about, the deregulation, the types of things that led to the expansion from 1982 to 1999, are going to be good for you long term. So if we do get some short term pain, and we will, what the cause will be, I don't know. But if we do, you know, keep buying into it, stay invested, you know, do the right things, reallocate, stay diversified. You know, all those catchphrases which work in the long term, do those things, and it's gonna, you're gonna look back on it as a buying opportunity
which we haven't had a great buying opportunity like this, you know, in probably since what, 2011 was the last time we had a real downturn?
Yeah, probably. So, I mean, you know, obviously, if you just bought the bottom of Ebola in 14, you know, in the one day you had a shot. But I mean, you're right. There hasn't been a steady downward move except for the beginning of last year, but that was, you know, it was over on February 11th and we jack and bolted right up. But so, you know, when you look at this, okay, and you say that, you know, allocate and stay, and again, I don't disagree. I mean, I think that, look at, if you're investing, and this is where I think a lot of people make a big mistake. They get too over-margined, and they're borrowing money, or they're putting in money in the market that they might need tomorrow, which you cannot do that. You have to be able to withstand how deep a correction could be. So if you're buying solid companies that are going to stay in business, you know, maybe they're not going to be the high flyers, but you know they're going to be there. I think that's more important to then and make sure you're only investing money that you can afford not to need tomorrow. What do you think?
Yes. I mean, because even, you know, we saw it in the last crash. If I bought, oh, for instance, a Caterpillar, and Caterpillar goes from, you know, heck, at that point, I think in 08 and 09, it went from, you know, 90-something to 22. As long as I don't need to sell that, and I hold on to it, you know, within a few years, it was back at 110. I think it's around 99 now. But, and you've collected a dividend, a nice dividend all the way along. And I'm just using them as an example. I'm not telling people to run out.
We're not recommending, you know, Caterpillar. In fact, I won't. Mike's not making any recommendations on the show. He's just actually using an example. Me, I'd be selling Caterpillar here because they complained about the dollar again. But that's just me.
Your point is, if you can hold that, and it's not forced out of your hands through leverage or a margin call or the fact that you need it to, you know, to keep the lights on or the heat on, then you're in the long term, buying good, solid companies is going to hold you in good stead. And that's how you end up being able to retire comfortably with money. Because obviously you can't stay, you know.
Hold that thought. I got to cut you short. We'll get this back on the other side of the break. This is Mike Brown. browncapital.org. Check him out. This is the Bubba Show, Top of Horowitz. LibertyTalk.fm allows you to download the show every single day, as well as BubbaTrading.com, which you get the Bubba's Bottom Line, which we do once a week, and a new TV show series. And wait to hear this one, because I'm going to be woofing. I'm pissed. This is the Bubba Show, Top of Horowitz. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show, Top of Horowitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Mike Brown, the coach. And, of course, he's got baseball season going, so he's got to get out there and bust his ass. I hope he's been working out. browncapital.org. All right, so, Mike, you know, we're talking about, you know, being able to hold and sustain. And, of course, that is one of the secrets, which is Albert Einstein calls the eighth wonder of the world, compounding. And, of course, you know it from dealing in the business, that if you can stay in the market and hold, the markets will go up. They do go up 9% year over year. And as long as you're buying, as long as you're not chasing garbage, okay, and being panicked out every time the market sells off, the markets do go up 9% year over year. So that's a mathematical certainty. But now if you add in a hedge to that, that makes it even better, doesn't it?
Absolutely. What it does is, you know, obviously, like we just discussed, where you don't have any volatility, you know, it's easy to hold things. But you get a more normalized period where we have some sustained swings in the market, hedging your portfolio allows you, it makes it a lot easier to sleep at night. So.
Right, and allows you to compound more. And again, look, we know that markets run in cycles, and you know, there's no, you know, sure thing. So, but what are you thinking now? You know, there's been a lot of talk, you know, about OPEC, and oil's been holding up at a, you know, at a 50-some dollar level. And I say BS, that oil's overpriced here, in my opinion, because the United States is self-sufficient, and we have about a 200-year supply that we can get at to with no problem without destroying the environment. And if we're still using gas in 200 years, there's a problem, right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah. If we're still using gas in 20 years, I think I'll be surprised. So I mean, the way the battery technology is leaping forward, you know, I think it's going to take care of itself. You know, obviously, there's the environmental lobby and all that, and that's all well and good, and you know, I'm for that type of stuff, but I think the the free market is going to take care of that, just because of the advances we're getting in the solar capacity, the advances we're getting in battery capacy. And, you know, is it 10 years from now? Is it 20 years? You know, it just seems like the technology is advancing so fast. And I think the carbon fuel engine, you know, the internal combustion engine, is going to be a thing of the past sooner rather than later.
Well, why do you think the oil companies are working on electronic cars too? Because, you know, like the tobacco companies, before they got divested into other things, they didn't let them go out. So certainly big oil is really the number one controlling political lobby. What do you think?
Yes, absolutely.
So they must be waiting for them to get their technology developed before they start doing anything crazy. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, will it be Elon Musk, or will it be? I guarantee, you know, if you're the oil companies, if you're the oil companies, you don't want to miss this. I mean, they're not stupid. They see it coming. They're not, you know, nobody wants to be the last company making buggy whips, right? So you've got to get out ahead of that. And when the technology arrives, you know, that is where people are going to go. If you don't have to, if I can get in my car every morning and it has I have a battery capable of a full day's charge where I can go all the places I go now, why wouldn't I buy that, even if it costs me, you know, a little bit more per petrol tour? What's it going to cost me in gas? You know, that type of thing. So that's coming. You know, at that point, you don't want to own a gas station either, right? Because you're not going to need those.
Right.
So what happens to the convenient marts that dot our landscape, right?
Well, you're going to have a place to fill up on your quick charge. You know, it's like cell phones. You know, you have them and you always run out of a charge. You got to get a quick charge somewhere. So you need a station to go get your quick charge. But no, of course, that industry will change. Look at right now. I mean, there's almost no need for a shopping mall anymore. I mean, you know, you have Amazon that basically sells everything.
And bought something off there today, actually.
Well, I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean, listen, they're the best price usually.
I'll tell you real quick. It wasn't even for me. It wasn't even a price issue. It was a simple fact that I found a printer, and I'm like, why am I not using this printer? It's an expensive printer. Oh, I'd lost the power cord, so I just happened to go on Amazon and punch in power cord to this particular printer. They had one. $18, you know. I could have went to how many different stores looking for that and not found it. You know, it took me all of 5 minutes to find it, order it, pay for it, and it'll be there in a couple of days.
It might be there tomorrow, but the best thing is you might have, you didn't have to go out, you didn't have to spend gas to get it, you didn't have to waste your time. You were done in 5 minutes, which is the point. So, you know, again, I think the mall shopping days, the big deals are over. I don't know what's going to happen with all that property, but I don't think there's going to be many of those around anymore, because they used to be an event, right? You know, like Woodfield Mall, when it opened in Chicago, it was an event. The big mall in Minneapolis, was that Mall of America, I think it is? That's still an event, but they're losing their luster because nobody needs to go there and buy. So are you going to go pay $100 a square foot to be a tenant there when nobody's buying anymore? They're window shopping, and they'll go home and they'll buy it online, so they don't have to carry it. They don't have to do anything with it. They get it at home. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly, you know, that's certainly coming. Creative destruction. I mean, that is what technology is doing to the world. We're constantly destroying the world that is here and creating a new one. So, you know, what happened to the Magnificent Mile, you know, in Chicago when that, you know, as people move more and more towards that, you know, maybe because it's a tourist stop, it'll survive. But yeah, the malls, the dots of landscape. And we've already seen that where they're certainly smaller than they used to be. You know, you're seeing Macy's is closing how many stores right now, for the simple fact that, you know, people don't need it. So, and they're going to have to adapt and change. They're going to have a better online presence. They're going to compete with, the Amazons of the world. And, you know, same thing that, you know, the newspapers have had to do over the last, you know, 15, 20 years. You know, they've had to adapt. You know, it used to be I could read the New York Times. Now I have to pay a subscription. You know, so they've learned how to monetize it, and that's what the stores are going to have to do, the ones that survive. And there certainly will be a large number of them that don't survive.
No, I agree. And speaking of newspapers, I had to buy, I don't read the paper. I read my phone, right? I mean, I'm sure you do the same thing. But now I had to buy a paper for my mom. $2 for a daily Chicago Tribune. I almost had a heart attack.
Yeah, right. I can remember delivering our local paper, and I want to say it was $2 for 2 weeks, where my little ticket stub that I had to hand people every 2 weeks when I collected.
You're about right, because it used to be, listen, paper used to be a quarter a day and a dollar on Sunday. All right. Yeah. I mean, I think when I delivered papers, they were a nickel. Okay. And it was a quarter for Sunday. So, I mean, obviously we've changed, and one of the problems is I don't think we've kept up with the changes, and I think that should be one of the goals going forward, is to learn to keep up with change and reevaluate every couple of years, because we do change so fast, and technology is making things change even faster. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And you and I deal with it on a daily basis, and I still find at times it to be overwhelming. You know, I can't, it's, things are moving so fast right now. And it's, you know, does it ever plateau? I mean, obviously things move very fast in the Industrial Revolution, you know, and at some point in time in there, for at least a few decades, it plateaued out. I mean, the phone, you know, I was calling my girlfriend on, worked exactly the same way as the phone, you know, the guy 30 years, before, you know, 20 years, 30 years before was calling his girlfriend in high school. You know, they worked basically the same way. But right now, I mean, just look at the, you know, when did the iPhone, the first iPhone, 06, 07? And just how much differently we use just that device in a 10-year period of time. You know, I use it as a scanner a lot of the time now. Right. You know, scan an email document, that type of stuff. So it's certainly the pace of the creative destruction right now is incredible. So,
take me back to I'd like to go back to about 1960. I don't want to have a cell phone. That was what I always wanted when I was a kid. I don't want one anymore. I don't like them. I'm tired of it. I think we're moving too fast. But and the
well,
shows,
right, you know, when you left the office, you were out of the office.
That's right.
Now, you know, in my business, it's not uncommon to get a phone call, to get an email, and you're seeing that in Europe where. They're moving to, you know, employees are not, it's not mandatory to check your email.
That's right. And I got to cut you off. This is Mike Brown, browncapital.org. He'll be back again soon. We'll have to dig him up again, but at least we got him for 2 days in a row. This is the Bubba Show, Top Bubba Horowitz, LibertyTalk.fm. You get the download of the show. In the meantime, everybody have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station, right here on the Bubba Show, Top Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks. Bye.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.